desperately need it. It seems like, if I put it on the 10-foot mast, I was always going to say, gee, I bet you a little more mast may make this antenna a little bit better, more effective. In comparison, unfortunately, and I'm going to say something now, remember, this is subjective. This is my opinion, and please don't come after me with the company, because I once got myself into trouble once before by making a statement about, you know, about antennas, and so I'm not going to mention the name of this antenna, but it's based on, let's put it this way, what something you sent me on the internet. In all tests I made, the 30-meter dipole outperformed this antenna, Dick.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Well, the dipole is horizontal, and maybe the antenna you were testing were vertical, and some of these antennas do put a significant compromise. But as I see it, everything I see on this ad and what I know about length of wavelength of the real radiating section of this antenna tells me that a substantial amount of current is going to be flowing in the mounting structure. Therefore, the length of the mounting structure is going to have an effect. And whether or not that 45 kc of bandwidth falls on your favorite frequency after you mount it in the final location is the only thing I'm worried about. The other bands, I think, are going to be a minor detuning. But the 40-meter band, I think, is going to be a little bit troublesome on that one. But if you've got an antenna tuner that has enough range to it, and you are going to be using a rather low-loss, high-quality transmission line, the fact that the antenna gives you a 10-to-1 standing wave ratio somewhere in the 40-meter band where you want to operate, and if your antenna tuner will tolerate that, you're going to be getting 90-some-odd percent of the performance. You'd be amazed how many people don't believe that. You say those words on Saturday afternoon on the 20-meter band, and the majority of people will climb down your throat and tell you you're absolutely crazy. And I think they're wrong most of the time. So hope you've got an antenna tuner that's got the range, John. KC2WGB, K2RYW in the TechNet.
KC2QIQ with a comment?
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, I think I'd still try to get the VSWR and the band segment that he's looking for in 40 before he does mount it up in the air. At least try to get the best he can. And one of the ways I would attempt it would be to, okay, if you know that you've only got a 10-foot mast, but the actual length is going to be longer, you can simulate a longer length of that mast by taking a cable or a very, very thick ground wire and getting a clamp, clamping it onto the bottom of that mast, and then simulating the additional length with that extra wire and lay it out. And then this way, at least, you'll have a closer counterpoise to what it'll probably look like when it's actually up in the final location. K2RW, KC2QIQ.
I did that, Dick. That's another thing I did with the wire.
Yeah, the extra wire on the bottom of the mast will make it almost electronically the full length of what it's really going to be. But the fact that that wire is going to be off to one side and that wire is laying against the ground is going to give some difference in performance. It's in the right direction, but I don't think it's going to get all the way there. Let's see if Mel had any corroborating evidence on that. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Also one more comment, Dick, after that.
Okay, Mel first, go ahead.
You know, I thought of the same thing. I said, aha. I said, you know what you do? We'll put a piece of wire on the bottom here. I said, maybe it'll do the same thing as pushing it up further on more mast. I clipped that wire on, big staunchy cable I used, you know, a booster cable, you know, battery booster, an automobile booster. One of the things I had the big, you know, I was thinking, what should I use? Oh, I know, I got hanging in the garage real quick. I put that on, no effect. Believe it or not, I said, that surprised me. I thought for sure that would have an effect. But I'll tell you something, sliding it up and down the pipe, it sure does have an effect. And another thing you do is with that antenna, in proximity to the roof, you know, I got the copper gutters. You'd be amazed if it gets anywhere near that copper gutter, within a couple of feet of it, and it really must screw up the pattern on that antenna real quick, because actually I was able to make it have a null, get a null on it on WWB deck by just moving it around on the patio deck over.
Yeah, that is quite a bit of tuning. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, I was just waiting for the commercial to end there. The only other thing I was thinking about with the tuner is the tuner will definitely work okay for 40 meters, but I think for some of the other bands, even 20, 20 might still work okay. But as he starts going up to 6, I think what's going to happen is the antenna tuner may become more of a problem. So it might be an interesting thing is if he does have the antenna tuner, is to put a two-position antenna switch so that he can run basically, you know, direct with the antenna on one end of the switch and on the other side, the switch be able to go through through the antenna tuner from that antenna. So there'd be basically two different ways of getting to the antenna. Because I agree with you. You know, a lot of times these antennas, when you get them up in the air, it's very, very hard to get them exactly where you want them to be in all the spots of the band when you want. So the tuner's definitely going to be helpful with something like that. But I think there's going to be a point to where to think about having some easy way of bypassing the tuner, or make sure you're using a tuner that has the bypass button that'll allow you to go straight through it so that when you go up on 6 meters, on 6 meters at 50 megahertz, it really won't mess you up too much. Back to you, Dick. K2RW, KC2QIQ.
Question, gee, it almost skipped my mind. Something very unusual.
Yeah, let me, before I go to Mel, let me go back to Glenn. Glenn, are you concerned that the true insertion loss of a well-built antenna tuner used on 6 meters will create decibels of insertion loss of signal? Is this a belief, or do you have some hard evidence of that? Because if the tuner is made out of the right kind of materials, and if it's rated for operation on 6 meters, I'm having trouble believing that a well-made tuner would create insertion loss that will show up on a thermal imaging camera, if you know what I mean. Over to you, Glenn, K2RIW.
Well, my experience with the antenna tuners are, you know, there's certain ones like, you know, the inexpensive ones like MFJ. They make them for, you know, 440, 2 meters, 6 meters, and when you're using them on those individual bands, they tend to have very, very nice performance. The lower band ones, the ones that cover, you know, 160 through 10 meters, those antenna tuners seem to give the best performance and seem to tune the nicest. They favor, like, 20 meters through 160, and usually the two best areas for tuning the two bands are usually 40 and 80. 160 is a little bit of a stretch with some of these tuners, 10 meters. And as I said, it's just sometimes it affects the receive is funny. Sometimes the pattern of the antenna seems a little weird. It's not so much a heating problem, Dick, but just very, very strange performance, I guess, is the best way of explaining it. Back to you, Dick.
When you say strange performance, how did you know the performance was strange, Glenn?
Well, it winds up with, like, very, very strange ripples. Like, if you take an antenna analyzer and you analyze, like, I like to use that MFJ antenna analyzer a lot and look at the antenna by itself. Then I'll put a tuner in between and then adjust the tuner to a bunch of different frequencies. And usually when the antenna tuner works sweet on an antenna is when you start seeing that the passband is kind of flat. In other words, even if the VSWR is off a little bit, you don't see a lot of ripple in it. When you get to, like, sometimes, points where you see a lot of ripple and you're using a lot of very, very high-Q tuning, you get some erratic operation there.
Okay, what I think you're saying is that in many cases there is multiple ways you can set the tuner, and some of the ways you set the tuner becomes an extremely high-Q narrowband circuit. If you back off from those positions and set the tuner another way, now this is a manually operated antenna tuner. I'll admit some of these automatic antenna tuners, you may not have this option, or maybe there isn't a manual override. But did you have trouble finding a way of setting the antenna tuner so you got reasonable insertion loss and reasonable bandwidth on the upper bands? Were you unable to find that location? Over to you, Glenn.
I guess what I'm trying to say, Dick, is with a lot of these antenna tuners, they have sweet spots to them. Certain bands, you get nice flat ripple depending on the antenna that you're using and how it's loaded on the other side. And you don't wind up with a lot of ripple, and you can kind of like softly tune on to your resonant point of the antenna, and you get a nice sweet operation. In some, certain combinations of tuners and antennas, you wind up with a high ripple of high, these high Q effects. And you can try tuning around it, but sometimes it, there's just no way to fix a turkey, you know what I'm saying? It's just a rotten combination. And sometimes I find that, like, you know, for like 6 meters, it's nice to have a 6 meter tuner, or for 2 meters, have a 2 meter tuner, 440, a 440, you know, 70 centimeter tuner. And when you go do using like 10 through 160, really 160, I almost like to have my very own specially made 160 meter tuner. And like, you know, 10 through 20, I almost like a different one there too. And it's just from experience that, you know, when you're trying to do all these multi bands, it's very, very hard to get a tuner to work over all of the bands and get all those strange ripply effects out of them and things like that. I don't know if anybody else on the air has got a similar experience, but it's something I see all the time.
Yeah, I've got some understanding for what's going on here. And there are very few antenna tuners that work on 440 or 2 meters. Mel, what is your experience with antenna tuners and bypassing them? K2KEY, K2LIW?
That's what I was going to get to next. I went and got the AEA antenna analyzer, you know, the graphic antenna analyzer, and I stuck that on, and that's why I'm going to ask you a question. How does this happen? The display on it, the graphic display, like, for instance, the look across the 40-meter band, this thing, and it's maintaining, you know, the average SWR was maintaining at 1.5. That it did say, average SWR, 1.5. However, it looked like, I got 40 meters, it looked like the display on it looked like something like a sawtooth. Ups and down, little valleys, I don't know, it just looked like jagged things, little notches in there. Yet the SWR was staying within around 1.5. The RL indication, at the same time, I got 40 meters with only a RL of 6 dBs. Now, it varied. As I went into different bands, the best I saw was an RL of about 10 dBs, I believe. However, the SWR was great. So, this is unbelievable that they have this magic matching system, Dick. But the return loss coefficient, it doesn't get up to what my dipole does, over.
Yeah, let's see if I'm understanding what you're saying. RL is return loss, a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio, which for the average amateur is the bare minimum performance the antenna better have, otherwise most of these no-tune solid-state rigs will go crazy. Some of them require better than a 1.7 or a 1.6, otherwise they start doing funny things. A return loss of 9.5 dB, roughly, is the number that gives you a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. Where you're talking about a 6 decibel return loss, we're now getting closer to, I'm not sure the exact number, but I think it's probably a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio, 3.5-to-1. So if the meter was telling you better than 1.5 standing wave ratio, and simultaneously telling you 6 dB of reflection coefficient, those two numbers do not hang together. Assuming now the return loss and the VISWR are both measured at the same location, if return loss is telling you what's the return loss at the antenna side, and the standing wave ratio is telling you what's happening on the transmitter side of the antenna tuner, then it would make some sense. But other than that, those numbers don't hang together, so it sounds like there is an error in what was being displayed. Let me turn it back to you for some comments on this one, Mel. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Exactly. That's why I brought it up. Now, wait. Let me tell you. This is no tuner involved here. I'm standing 10 feet from the antenna. It's out on my patio. It's a short piece of coax cable just going to that. I screwed on to that thing. We're outside on the patio deck, and I'm holding this handheld analyzer. Now, how does this happen on 40 meters? How are they achieving this 1.5, and yet the RL is a little less than 10 dB, about 9-something dBs, or whatever the heck it came to. And I'm telling you, the display is strange. It looks like, I said to myself, how the heck are they generating, how is this happening? The display, remember, it's a graphic display. It looks like valleys up and down, like a sharp valley, like a sawtooth stick, over.
Yeah, those numbers are not hanging together. A 6 dB reflection coefficient is 0.5 in voltage, and that is, by definition, a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio. Let me double check here. Yeah, it is a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio, and a 3-to-1 standing wave ratio and a 1.5 and a 6 dB reflection coefficient, they go together. So something was not calibrated correctly is my best guess as to what's going on there, Mel. And yes, it does require a little bit further looking into it. My best recommendation on how to look into it would be to take T connectors and 50 ohm resistors and put the T connectors and 50 ohm resistors together in combinations and see what kind of standing wave ratios you get. On a real antenna, where you've got multiple wavelengths of cable going out to it, and therefore the phase angle of the reflection is moving rapidly, depending on how well calibrated is the directional coupler section of your antenna tuner, can make a huge difference in the way it displays. Standing wave ratio bridge. The standing wave ratio bridge is supposed to have a lot of directivity between the forward mode and the reverse mode. And if it doesn't, and the phase is rapidly changing versus frequency, you can get some very crazy effects. Maybe that's what you were running into. And by way of T connectors and 50 ohm resistors right at the tuning device or the VisWa measuring device, it would help you resolve what's going on. So, I think you know a little bit about what you're about to be up against here, John. And I think your biggest worry is the 40 meter band and where's the further portion of the band and whether or not you got enough range to your antenna tuner to tolerate it at first. And it's not going to explode if your antenna has a high VisWa at first and you've got to, at some later time, take it down and readjust something. It's just going to be an annoyance. KC2WGB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Dick, you misunderstood me.
Go ahead, Mel.
Let me describe the setup, the test setup. I got the vertical sitting on a mast. I got a short piece of coax, it's like 10 foot of coax cable coming down. I got an AB switch, so I can switch back and forth from one of my dipoles into the receiver. Like I said, I was using that portable shortwave receiver. I took the portable shortwave receiver, disconnected it. I said, okay, let's just look at the characteristics of this antenna on the analyzer. So we plugged it into the analyzer. I flipped the AB switch back to the dipole. The analyzer is indicating like normal. It's a 1.5 SWR. The return loss coefficient was like 11, 12 or something like that. Great. I flipped it over to this antenna on 40 meters. I'm getting I see the SWR is still indicating about 1.5, 1.6 and all. But the RL is under 10. I'm saying, how the heck is this happening? But I'm looking at the graphic display and it looks like a sawtooth. I don't understand. No tune is involved, Vic. This is all direct. This is what was driving me crazy. And it varied from band to band. It agreed with itself perfectly on 10 meters. Oh, 10 meters is excellent. The RL, everything agreed properly. And the signals, whatever signals, when you let it drop, we couldn't find too much activity or any signals really on 10 meters. So, all right, we just try to pick here or there, whatever we could hear. Even like some kind of images or whatever. Seems to agree with the 10-meter inverted V I have. But what the heck was doing it when it gets to around 40 meters? How did they manage to get this kind of reading going? I mean, with this network, what the heck is going on there? I mean, this is very unusual condition. I've never seen this really before on an antenna, Dick, over.
Yeah, I'm still guessing, though, even without an antenna tuner, the real antenna has multiple wavelengths of cable going out to the antenna. And so therefore, whatever reflected power you've got has a certain magnitude, which is changing slowly versus frequency, but the phase angle of that reflected power is changing rapidly. And your standing wave ratio bridge, depending on how well it is calibrated for directivity, can get kind of confused. If your directional coupler, which has got to be part of every standing wave ratio bridge, if it is not well adjusted for directivity, that means a little bit of the forward going signal is mixing to the detector for the reverse going signal. And those two signals are mixing together as you sweep in frequency, because the reversing, the signal coming back down the cable is sweeping pretty rapidly in phase as you scan in frequency. Therefore, the leakage signal forward and the real signal return are rapidly going in phase and out of phase, giving you peaks and valleys of detection, and that makes a sawtooth waveform. So I'm a little bit suspicious about how good is the directivity. By way of a good 50-ohm resistor on that standing wave ratio bridge, you'd like it to read 1-to-1. Put two 50-ohm resistors in parallel with a T-connector. By definition, that's a 25-ohm resistor, 25-ohm load, a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. You'd like the standing wave ratio bridge to read 2-to-1. You'd like it to read 2-to-1 as you scan in frequency. It probably will. If you then took a very low loss piece of cable, but multiple wavelengths of cable, and put it in between the standing wave ratio bridge and that T connector with the two 50 ohm resistors, you're still getting a 2-to-1 standing wave ratio. You're still getting a 9.5 dB reflection coefficient, but you're now getting that reflection coefficient through multiple wavelengths of cable. And now when you scan that, a good bridge will continue to read the same standing wave ratio. One that's not well calibrated will start reading a sawtooth waveform with nothing but a standing wave ratio bridge, a length of cable, a T connector, and a pair of 50-ohm load resistors. I wonder if that makes a little more sense of what I'm saying here, Mel. K2GEY. K2LAW in the TechNet.
Let's put it this way. This K2KEY, this AEA, an analyzer, is a very sophisticated piece of equipment. Even has software, which I then put in. In other words, what they did, instead of having to drag a laptop with you, you put it into this thing, and then you can take it down, and you put it into your laptop with the software, and you can do a lot of analysis. And this thing is, I checked, like you say, I thought maybe it could leak some way back, some way. How is this doing this? And I could not come up with an answer. In fact, I did one more thing. What do you think I should, if I just broke a meter, I have my digital voltmeter there, and if I take the digital voltmeter and I put it across the antenna, the PL250, the SO239 connector, what do you think I should read over?
Whoa, that's a tough one, because very few digital voltmeters in the AC scale go beyond, let me pick a number, 100 kilohertz. When you put a 3.5 megacycle or a 14 megacycle signal into the AC scale of a digital voltmeter, a digital multimeter, and you're way beyond the frequency range where it is rated, and you've got these great big long clip leads coming out of it, no matter what you read, I wouldn't believe it, if you know what I mean. But I don't think the machine, the digital multimeter, is made to operate at RF frequencies. Yes, you can choose the 300 volt scale where you know you're not exceeding the voltage correctly, but I think you're way beyond its frequency maximum for that kind of a test, is my guess, unless you have a very special one. Back to you, Mel.
Talk about resistance-wise. I put this meter across it, and this goddamn thing reads no resistance there. How the heck is that? What have they got in there that, you mean it's just some kind of an inductor across it? There's no resistance at the bottom of that antenna, resistance-wise, Dick, over.
Okay, I think you're telling me that the antenna itself has an RF choke inside, therefore no DC voltage can be built up on the cable, but the RF choke may be an open circuit at the RF operating frequency, but with an ohm meter you measure very few ohms. Many of the really good antennas do that now. From center conductor to shield on the transmission line of the antenna, you'll measure very close to 0 ohms. Lots of good antennas do that. A T-match antenna with the dipole feed on a Yagi will quite often measure that way, because DC-wise it is a short circuit, even though at the operating frequency it's a 50-ohm load. So that's hard to judge. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, so they got this pole. They got this, I guess, say, some kind of transformer. Now, I'm going by what you sent me on the internet. You know, what this guy managed to depot one of these things. You saw, you know, you're following what I'm talking about. That you said, oh, your comment was that, oh, you should be able to duplicate any ham or, you know, want to really get into this. You should be able to make one of these things up, you know, that they're selling for lots of hundreds of dollars. Do you know what I'm talking about, Dick?
I sure do. Those four ferrite cores with wire wrapped in there in a very specific way in order to make the balance slash impedance matching network at the base of that antenna. Where that article told you what brand name, what model number of ferrite beads he used and what kind of wire he used, in my opinion, that's very easy to duplicate. I don't remember now if I traced the actual wiring, whether or not that should operate as a short circuit, but lots of balancing structures can, with an ohm meter, be a short circuit, even though at RF frequencies they behave like a charm. Back to you, Mel.
What I'm trying to determine, okay, this is a balancing thing. Is this what they call a union, unbalanced, or, no, it can't be that, because it's a balanced input. So it's a balanced to an unbalanced. I could not understand the speed in the business. I tried to follow that, you know, exactly how he just showed that wiring of that thing. And how does this actually work with that pole? I mean, in other words, how are they maintaining if you look at the graph, this goddamn thing has got supposedly complete coverage from 7 megahertz to 6 meters thick, and it stays within less than, the SWR stays within, you know, that parameter that they said, and I just don't understand how it can do all this thing, and yet display certain crazy effects. Why would the signal, if it is some calls, is it the transformer? All right, let's back up. Is it the transformer that is creating a loss of signal, but yet being able to maintain the SWR factor over?
You're getting very close to what's going on. Let me find that article right now so I can take a quick look at it. Turns out someone mailed me a copy of a beautiful article. All of a sudden I'm having trouble locating it, where this particular antenna we're talking about, this vertical antenna, was taken apart, and let's say it was re-engineered, disassembled to figure out what's going on. There were four very large ferrite transformers. Some of the wiring of those transformers went around them, and some of it looped through and came back again in a funny way. Everything I know about balance or onions, unbalanced input, unbalanced output, where impedance matching and or reactive correction was taking place. Let me drop. I did not see enough wiring and hardware in the schematic diagram to give you a flat frequency response across all of those megacycles. Because the manufacturer tells you it's a compromised antenna, he's telling you and there's going to be some extra insertion loss. Left-handedly, he's telling you that the particular ferrite coils he is using, in the way he's using them, at the power level he's using them, at the frequency he's using them, they do represent a distributed resistor. In other words, if I put 100 watts key down for 10 minutes through that antenna, and I look at those chunks of ferrite, of those toroids, with a thermal imaging camera, I am definitely going to see heat. If the ferrite was ideal, if everything was ideal, there would be no insertion loss. Well, no insertion loss with that schematic would not give you that flat a frequency response. So there is a resistor. There is a dummy load resistor in the base of that antenna. Your eye doesn't see it. The RF wave does see it. It's wrapped into that fancy wiring and the ferrite of those toroidal transformers. So to get that low a visuar across that band, there's got to be resistive loading. There is no fixed resistor in the disassembly. Therefore, it's wrapped into those toroids. I'm guaranteeing that those toroids would be hot to the touch at 100 watts key down for 10 minutes. What do you think, Mel? K2KEY, K2RIW.
I'm telling you, there's some kind of a, as they say, hocus pocus going on here. This is the situation, I could say. I looked at this poor gentleman that spent a lot of money for that antenna, and I'm saying to myself, I've got up here a dipole, a 30-meter dipole, a 40-meter dipole, an 80-meter loop antenna. If I put them all together, I don't have $50 worth of material, I mean, wire-wise, you know. And I'm saying, and it's outperforming this shiny thing that's very impressive looking. I'll tell you, it looks good. And I just was flabbergasted. I said, gee, look at the chart on this thing and everything. I figured I was going to say to myself, oh boy, this thing, if it performs as good as my dipoles, wow, boy, oh boy, I got Eric said as good as sliced bread. But the dipole, well, do you stick? Especially on 40 meters, the dipole was a heck of a better performer. Listening to every station, wherever we listen to, looking at that F meter, and like I said, I didn't want to make this person feel bad, but there was quite a variation in almost all cases now. I know you can tell me vertically polarized, horizontally polarized, but we're listening to different stations. It should have been somewhere there where quality came in over.
QEO take.
K2YO.
Rich recognized and Bernie recognized in that order. I'm not disagreeing with you at all, Mel. Even though there's some cross-polarization, you listen to so many different signals. No matter what the guy was radiating, some of those signals through the ionosphere are being twisted in polarization, and they're going to be co-phased with that antenna. That antenna, in my opinion, in lots of different ways, is telling us it has resistive insertion loss. It's got the equivalent of a fixed attenuator in between the antenna and that transmission line. The attenuation factor is wrapped up into those toroids. Your 40-meter dipole can outperform that thing by a whole lot of dBs, but your 40-meter dipole requires a significant amount of real estate. If the guy has nothing to operate on but the top of the little housing for the elevator shaft of his apartment building, and that's all he's allowed to use, he could mount that vertical antenna there. He probably is not going to be able to mount the 40-meter dipole there. So it's far from ideal, but it is a compromised antenna. And so I'm reasonably sure that what you measured is the real thing, and the fact that you saw disappointing results, and you and I on the TechNet for years have been saying that. Some of these very fancy vertical multi-band things with shiny pieces of aluminum, all kinds of doodads on them, and they cost $1 zillion. They look like they should be a real rock crusher of an antenna in physical appearance. What you see and what the RF sees can be awfully different. N2EO, K2RIW. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, good evening, Dick. Good evening, Mel. I know it's getting late, Dick. Is there time for a question concerning a 6-meter antenna?
Yeah, we haven't gone through our list yet. We haven't finished with John yet. So, no promises. We'll give it a try. Bernie, I think you wanted to say something. Go ahead, Bernie.
Dick, you made my point for me. I was just going to say, Mel, remember that not everybody's got space for a 40 or 80-meter dipole. Even a 40-meter dipole is, you're going to have, 20 meters or 60 feet of space Many of us don't have that. I don't have a tree in my yard that's taller than my house. My house is the tallest thing on my property. So, you know, a lot of us can't do that. So we do need to remember that we've got to have solutions. Sometimes the best you can do is the best you can do. And, yeah, it won't compete with a dipole, but it's better than nothing. So, anyway, just my comment here. And good night, guys.
Okay. Your audio could be louder, and that beep could be a lot lower. I'm wearing earphones, and that beep really blessed me, Bernie. Someday you guys got to get to adjust that a little bit. And in the case of a 40-meter dipole mounted at a reasonable altitude, the hard thing to believe is that a full half-wave 40-meter dipole is something like 67 feet long. And quite a few people do not have 67 feet of spacing between their trees or the mounting points, even if they mounted it as a sloper from the top of the elevator housing down to the roof of the building where they're allowed to string one piece of wire. Maybe they've only got 20 feet, not 67 feet. If you electronically shrink to half-wave dipole by putting loading coils and zigzagging and top hat capacitors on it, if you can get the 40-meter dipole by way of your antenna tuner and these techniques that I just mentioned resonate at your frequency, it will give you essentially full performance. And that's a hard thing to believe. Let me drop. The Bible on antennas in some people's minds is the edition number one of Krauss's book, McGraw-Hill Publishing, 1950, called Antennas. And if you carefully read the section on the infinitesimal dipole, as you make the dipole shorter and shorter physically, and you do whatever is required electronically to bring it back into resonance, loading coils, zigzag, top hat capacitors, antenna tuner, impedance matching network, whatever, as long as you're able to use low-loss materials and you bring it back into resonance, as the dipole shrinks to zero in length, the bandwidth of the dipole, the Q of the dipole is going to go up, the bandwidth is going to go down very rapidly. That's the bad news. But at the frequency where it resonates, it'll give you essentially full performance, almost within a couple of tenths of a dB, the exact same gain as the full-length dipole, the exact same effective capture area, electronically speaking, as the full-length dipole. Of course that doesn't make sense. It sounds crazy as all hell. Krauss said it. Various people who made the leap of faith to believe it and went and tested it found out it's to be true. There's a zillion people out there who said, that's crazy, I don't believe it, I'm not even going to test it, I'm not going to waste my time. Those grapes are probably sour anyhow, if you know what I mean. So if you understand how an antenna radiates, and if you can establish resonance and reasonable impedance matching at your favorite frequency, you will get full performance of a dipole. Yes, it doesn't make sense. Take my word for it. I've seen lots of examples of it. I believe it. I've tested it myself. I know we've gone kind of left of center, John, but as I see it, I think you know what you're up against here. You are going to get some change in tuning, I believe, in the length of your mounting pipe.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
We're going to get some change in tuning in the length of the mounting pipe versus the same final location. There's going to be some change in tuning. A great big clip lead on the bottom of the pipe, making it similar in length to the final pipe, will come a lot closer, even though that piece of wire is laying parallel to the ground. Your jumper cables on your car is what Mel used, and that's a darn good idea. And as you go forward with this experiment, come on back, John, and let us know how it turned out. KC2WGH. Here we go. WGB, K2RIW and TechNet. You got it, John.
Dick, thank you very much, all you guys out there, Glenn, Mel, everybody. I do have a Palstar 1500-watt auto-tuner, which I will be using with this, so I'm hoping that'll get me in close enough. And if I have to, I could lay out a length of 500,000s to add more mass to the pole itself, and maybe if you think that will help in tuning, at least maybe I can get a direction in which way to change the increments. But when I elevate it, maybe it'll work out that way. Other than that, I really thank you for a lot of help, and I'll probably be talking to you next week.
Yeah, to some degree, John, I think you may be worrying unnecessarily. We may have scared you a little bit. And even if at worst you want the antenna to perform at 7.2 megacycles and it performs at 7.1, that's not a showstopper. It's not going to explode. It's not going to catch on fire. And if your antenna tuner can bring it back to a low enough standing wave ratio to keep your transmitter happy, you're going to be a dB or two down in performance because of the extra loss of your feed line because of extremely high standing wave ratio. But you're going to be on the air. You're going to be talking to people. And any of these vertical antennas that are well-advertised, beautiful-looking structures, in many cases, they only have a fraction of the performance of a simple all-wire dipole mounted at a high altitude if you had the real estate to do that. And in many cases, you'd be amazed how many times a person has the real estate even though he thinks he doesn't. If the house is high enough, if there's one tree high enough, you can put a sloper on there, and you can do various things to the wire antenna to force it into resonance, even though you don't have enough length to it. You'd be amazed what performance you can get. Very few of us put up one single antenna during our ham radio career. Let me drop. Very few of us, I will say, very few of us buy 15 different transceivers. A few of us do. They like experimenting with brand and brand, from one brand and one model number to the next. They like all the lowest, latest horns and whistles. But very few of us do that. You know, invest $3,000 five times in a row. But when it comes to the antennas, particularly the homebrew antennas, they're usually not extremely high in price. And no matter how many antennas you got, you always wish you had more. You wish you had a bigger switching network so you could rapidly flip from one to the other depending on particular band conditions. So this may not be your last antenna. You'll be experimenting with others, in my opinion. Good luck with that, John, and let us know how it turns out. AC2, Alpha Zulu, if you're still there, if we haven't put you to sleep, go right ahead, Bob. K2RIW in the Tech Nest.
Hey, Dick, I'm still here.
Go right ahead, Bob. We're ready for you.
I got no questions, but I just want to know if this thing was working. Last week, I got on there. You said I didn't have a tone, but all the settings seem to be the same. This is a new IC7000, so I'm still trying to get the hang of it. Just way too many buttons and way too many menus. Back to you, AC2AZ.
I listened to you on the input. You're putting out a beautiful PL tone, and you're coming through the machine very well. Let me do a test, am I? Yeah, I just turned off my TFPL tone, and I do not come through the machine. So right now the machine is only accepting people who have a proper PL, and you sound very hi-fi, Bob. You got it made. Good luck with that rig. What brand is that rig, and how new is it for you, Bob?
This is an ICOM. I picked it up at Dayton Hamfest. Bought it from, AES, I think, and they shipped it free. And, of course, because they shipped it, there was no tax. So I got it for about $1,200. That was nice. It's a little portable rig, HF through 440. Color LCD screen, removable front, 100 watts, I think, through 6, and then it's 50, and then 30, I think, on 2 meters and 440.
Sounds real good. What model number is that, John? Bob?
It's the 7000. I think you replaced the 706.
Okay. Sounds awfully good. Sounds like you're going to be pretty happy with that rig. Okay. The next person who signed in was Freddie, KB2VBN. Are you still there, Freddie? K2RIW in the TechNet. Okay. And the last person who signed in that we didn't go to yet, one more time, is Matt. KC2YDT, or Yankee Delta Tango is what it sounded like. Are you there, Matt? And maybe he is not. Rich, you're number one on the runway. N2EO, go right ahead.
Okay, Dick, N2EO. Yeah, the TechNet's running later and later. And that's good. Dick, I have a question about 6 meters. I restored an oldie but a goodie. You may remember it from the late 60s. It's a Heathkit SB 110A transceiver, single sideband, 100-watt transceiver, pair of 6146s, uses a 6DS4 NuVista front end. Seems fairly sensitive. I spent a few months working on this radio. Got it working. On Friday, Barry M2MB went up there and put up a halo antenna. It was actually a Swero, a copy of the Cushcraft Swero. They got an SWR 1.5 running about 100 feet of LMR 400. Let me let it recycle. All right, my question, Dick, is I put the radio on my service monitor. Now, I didn't actually do a signal-to-noise check, but what I did was I ran the generator down to 0.1 microvolt, which is about as low as it goes, and I could still plainly discern the note in 50 megahertz. In other words, if I had a signal coming in at 0.1 on CW, I could copy it. It wasn't loud, but I could copy it. My question is, when I put the antenna on, the noise picks up, the white noise picks up coming into the receiver substantially. But I'm not hearing any ticks and pops and ignition noise. I'm a little confused why the band is so quiet when I can resolve a tenth of a microvolt and I get white noise when I plug in the antenna, but I'm not getting the ticks and pops and ignition noise, which leads me to believe something may not be 100%. I was thinking about putting a mass-mounted preamp out there from SSB Electronics, but that's a little bit on the expensive side. Wonder what your thoughts on the subject are, Dick. K2RIW, TechNet Limelock, N2EO.
Now, if you had a transistorized front end on an SB110A, what happens with transistors is that the noise figure equivalent of the transistor changes pretty rapidly depending on what impedance the transistor sees. In the case of a NuVista 2, you get very little of that effect. The noise figure of a resistor of a NuVista 2, whether it's looking into a 50-ohm load or looking into a 1,000-ohm load, its noise figure is fairly similar. It doesn't have that crazy sensitivity that a FET transistor does. The fact that you hear noise of the air, of the band, when you connect the antenna, tells me most likely the noise is coming from the antenna and from the environment. The clicks and pops would not be there if you had a real good noise blanker. On the front panel, is there any kind of a control that you can turn on and turn off the noise blanker? I'm with you. The 6-meter band in a single sideband receiver, not in an FM receiver, but in a single sideband receiver without a noise blanker, should be pretty noisy with man-made noise. Local fluorescent lighting and power pole, pole pig transformers arcing and all kinds of things happening, particularly in inclement weather. So, however, if the noise blanker is really doing its job, all of those clicks and pops go away. So there's a slim chance you're hearing real band noise and it's being turned away by a very good noise blanker. I'm a little bit skeptical of that because I didn't think that Heathkit in those days knew how to make a really good noise blanker. Let me drop this.
Hey, Dick?
Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
All along the North Shore, Queens, Con Ed makes an incredible racket between 40 and 60 megahertz.
Okay. Shouldn't he hear a 60-cycle component to that noise, Eric? Go ahead.
Not really. It sounds like white noise, but and it changes when they switch power loads and stuff like that. There's just something about it here. I live right across from the Charles Plenty Power Project, and that place is just horrible.
Okay, if all of the high-voltage distribution wiring, which is three phases, is each individual wire making lots of noise, and now you have three phases of it. That total combined noise is no longer a 60-cycle or 120-cycle noise. It's a much higher frequency. And for us older folks that don't have super good hearing, you may not hear the higher frequency components. combination of, is it LIPA-like or Con Ed noise, three-phase noise, lots of it, and or is there a noise blanker? Are some other factors worth measuring here? And there's ways you can make yourself a weak signal generator and see how well the halo is picking that up, just to be a double darn sure test. But is there a noise blanker you can turn off? And if you listen carefully enough, is there any harmonics of 60-cycle component present, particularly if you take that noise and put it into an oscilloscope and synchronize the oscilloscope to the 60-cycle line, line syncing of the scope. To look at the noise on an oscilloscope is going to give you some pretty strong clues, as I see it, Rich. Can you turn off that noise blanker? N2EO, K2RIW?
K2KEY, I think I know what his problem is.
Go ahead, Mel.
Hey, back in the dark days, the old days, whatever you want to call them, I built a couple of Cascode amplifiers, those using the 6CW4 or the 6GS4 New Vistas. And I noticed something strange with that goddamn little device, that a noise of 5 to 6 dB was quiet with that. But why I always used to say, you know, something strange, when this thing was on the antenna, also, it behaved different from when I used to put it on a source, you know, a test source, such as a signal generator. And what did I really find, but I think, what did I really think was going on there? I'm trying to remember. But I remember a similar, in other words, I've got to get my mind together here, like getting old too. But I remember that similar situation. It was like a difference between antenna performance and, like, you know, signal generator performance with the New Vistas stick. And I got to remember what I came up with over.
Mel, is there any chance that the 6DS4 was breaking into oscillation when it was connected to the antenna, and you had to do something to calm it down to stop it from oscillating? Any possibility that's what you ran into?
And you're talking about, in other words, it was taken off and off. Yeah. Could be. Could have been some kind of a, that it was basically breaking into an oscillation. But you know something? You know, you could be right, and I'll tell you why. When you did tune in a signal on it, the goddamn thing acted more like sometimes like a Q multiplier, Dick. You know what I remember? It's, you know what I'm talking about, the effect, over.
I sure do. An amplifier that's right at the edge of breaking into oscillation, like a Q multiplier when it's properly set, and you sweep a signal through there, your signal does experience some extra gain, but you hear a lot of extra noise. So whether or not that 6DS4, which is the New Vista tube that's on the front end of his Heathkit transceiver, whether or not it's on the hairy edge of breaking into oscillation, is something to be concerned about, Rich. So the combination of, and by the way, if it is breaking into oscillation, sometimes you just put a 47-ohm resistor between the grid connection of the 6DS4 and wherever it goes, I can calm it down, and or the plate, a 47-ohm resistor. Also, these New Vista tube sockets are notoriously noisy. Unplug that tube, squirt tuna cleaner in there, rock the New Vista tube back and forth while listening to the receiver. Every New Vista tube I ever used had a very noisy socket. Made all kinds of clicking and clacking noises as I rocked the tube in the socket. N2EO, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, Dick, K2RIW, TechNet, Limelight, N2EO. What's good information, Dick? No, the radio does not have a noise blanker. It has an automatic noise limiter in the audio circuit, but that's off. And there is no sophisticated blanker, as I can say. You know, I'm hearing signals. For instance, there's a beacon on 50.068. It's about, you know, it's about 5 and 6, 5 and 7 in there with the noise. Not particularly loud. Barry is copying it like S6, but has a five element beam, so it's not really a fair comparison. Also today, Barry went camping upstate. I was able to hear him up by the Tappan Zee Bridge, so I don't know. It's just something I'm really not sure, but as far as when you're talking about neutralization, it does have a neutralizing adjustment. I did adjust the neutralization. There's one coil. What they tell you to do is lift the 33K resistor that powers this thing, and there's a coil that you tune the minimum feed through to get a dip, and then reconnect the voltage. I did that. It doesn't appear to be oscillating, but I wouldn't swear to it. Back to that, and to Leo.
Yeah, I just remembered what the suggestion was.
Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, Rich, on the Nuvista, check the voltage on the plate. You know, it's a little triode, but the plate voltage is very critical. And I remember them telling me that. Now I came back when you started talking about neutralization and things. The plate voltage should be no more than about 70 volts, Rich, over.
Okay, fine, Mel. Well, I'll check it in the Heathkit. I have the Heathkit manual, so that's not a problem. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a slim possibility that the plate load resistor got cooked and went down to a lower value, and excess voltage is on that plate. And whether or not that would really kill the noise figure of the tube as opposed to just increasing its gain or misuse the tube, we'll find out. What you really want to know is what is the noise figure in situ measurement, in other words, in the living animal under the real working conditions. By way of...
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
By way of putting in a directional coupler, a 6, a 10, or a 20 dB directional coupler that has any kind of action at 6 meters, even if it's not rated. I mean, if you've got a directional coupler that's rated at 300 megs and you put it in the line, it doesn't matter. You can calibrate it. But with a signal generator, you can inject a signal through the directional coupler of known coupling coefficient, which you can calibrate. And now, while the antenna through the coupler is connected to the rig, you've got this little side path through the coupler by which you're injecting a signal and find out what the real sensitivity of the system is under working conditions. That'll confirm whether or not there's any kind of an oscillation killing sensitivity. So you've got the right hardware to do the test to confirm all this. 73, you all, this is TechNet number 1300 of the series that began in September of 1982.
Auto connect.
We should be back next week.
1, 2, 6.
We should be back next week and solving more of these problems. Over to you, Mel. K2KEY for any other words. K2LIW in the TechNet.
Okay. Rich, one more thing I remembered. See, it's coming back to me about New Vistas. Add a bead, an RF choke, on the filament lead, on the hot side of the filament lead. Make sure to bypass the 001 bypass capacitor on pin 12 of the New Vista. Pin 10 should be grounded. It's all coming back to me even this late hour. Pin 10 is grounded on the New Vista. Pin 12 is the filament lead. It should have a bypass, a 001 bypass to ground, and it should have on that pin also a little bead, an RF choke, Rich. I remember those things from when experimenting, when they used to come up with all the answers to all these type of conditions with that New Vista, Rich. Over.
Okay, thank you very much, Mel. I'm going to go downstairs in a little while and do some checking, but thank you.
Okay, good night, all. Yeah, it all comes back to me every so often. Oh, boy. Well, anyhow, it's fun. Thank you to the people I met today at the Ham Fest. It was a pleasure. 73's all. Dick, speak to you next week. This is K2KEY. Good night.
Tracy, good night.
Bye-bye, you all. Be kind to each other.